The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Our guest today is a world authority on competitiveness. He has pioneered research in this field for 25 years and is a professor at the Institute of Management Development, or IMD, in Switzerland, where he has founded the World Competitiveness Center. He was also the managing director of the World Economic Forum and of the Davos Symposium for 13 years. He has authored numerous publications on competitiveness and global business, including his best-selling book, Top Class Competitors: How Nations, Firms and Individuals Succeed in the New World of Competitiveness. Good morning, I'm Brian Fernandez, and with me on the Breakfast Grill is Stefan Garelli, founder of the IMD World Competitiveness Center. Welcome to the Breakfast Grill, Stefan.
Thank you very much and good morning to you.
Stefan, your book, Top Class Competitors: How Nations, Firms and Individuals Succeed in the New World of Competitiveness, defines competitiveness as the ability of a nation, company or individual to manage a set of disparate competencies to achieve prosperity. Now, you wrote that way back in 2006, but the world has changed very dramatically since then. Are your conclusions still relevant today?
Yes, they are, because when we are looking at the competitiveness of a nation or the competitiveness of a company, actually, it's the ability to put together a network of competencies, a network of resources. It's not the result of only being good at one thing. It's being good at many things. And I think that one of the misgivings about competitiveness sometimes for a company or for a nation is to believe that, you know, you are very good at doing one thing and that's enough. Actually, the winners are very good at many things.
Given that scenario now, you've said recently that the global economy is in reset mode. Tell us why.
It's in reset mode because we have been living during 10 extraordinary years since the recession has begun and since we had the economic and financial crisis. And actually, most of the way the economy used to work before has collapsed. The central banks have inundated the market with money, which is very cheap. So the interest rates have fallen down in certain countries like mine, Switzerland. We have even negative interest rates. We have seen a lot of very strange things happening, such as a lot of technological innovation, but the productivity hasn't moved. And we are thinking, you know, this is bizarre, this is strange. We have artificial intelligence, we have extraordinary development in terms of technology, but also social media. But the numbers in productivities are flat. And finally, we have seen that actually a lot of households did not get so many increase in their purchasing power. So the way we have been looking at the economy during the past 10 years was really very difficult because all the instruments, all the measurements we had in the past didn't work anymore. So we had to reset not only the economy, but we had to reset our mindset and the way we were approaching the economy.
Speaking of resetting our mindsets, since 2008, the traditional Keynesian economic model has been applied to recover from the global financial crisis. But the reality is it didn't really impact the real economy. So in fact, money went out to bail out the banks and government. So Yanis Varoufakis, for example, the former Greek finance minister, is particularly critical of this because the money loaned to Greece by the EU essentially went out to bail out the French and German banks. So what's your take on this?
I think that, indeed, if you take the Keynesian economy at the beginning, it could be resumed in a very simple way. When you have an economic crisis, you print money. With the money you have printed, you try to build some big infrastructure like a dam. Then you give salaries, wages to the people, and with the money, the people go in a shop and they buy something, and then the economy recovers. We have done the same thing at the beginning, printing money, but the money, instead of going to the people, has been indeed going, number one, for the banks to bail them out, and number two, also to the governments in many ways. And it means that the money actually went into the financial system and not in the real economy. And that's why we found ourselves in this very peculiar situation with enormous amount of cash available in the system, not only in banks but also in companies, because companies have a lot of cash because they could borrow very cheaply. But actually, the real economy did not see anything happening. And the proof of it is that if all this money would have gone into the real economy, we would have inflation in many countries. What we have seen is that in many countries, we had, at the contrary, deflation.
The byproducts of this has been the fact that since 2008, because money didn't go into the real economy, income inequality had actually increased. Why has this acceleration happened?
It has happened because basically those in the financial sector continue to make a lot of revenues and to increase their net wealth. So a lot of disparity came from the fact that actually the very wealthy could become even more wealthy because they could play with the system much better than the others. They had access to capital. They had access also to cheap credit. And I think that it was essentially a financial bubble, if we can put it that way. And this is where we have a problem. I think that that people become rich if this is a result of their work, their innovation, their risk-taking. I think this is fair enough. I mean, this is how an economy is working. An economy is rewarding those who are taking risk and have innovation. But when an economy is rewarding people simply because they are there, and because they are using the system, this is very bad. And I think this is where people are very critical, because they see people getting very wealthy, very rich, and not doing a lot of things for that. So this is a real issue for the future. I think we should make the difference between equality of opportunities at the beginning, where everybody should have this equality of opportunities, but they cannot be equality of results, because some people are working harder than others and some people will have success. Success has to be rewarded. What has not to be rewarded is simply a situation where you make money simply because you are there.
But Stefan, then what are the solutions you feel that could enable income inequality to be bridged?
I think the first solution, and we start to go in this direction, the first one is more transparency in the system. I think that we have been in a system which has been not very transparent globally, where people could make a lot of money and nobody was quite sure where the money was, how it was really transferred from one country to the other. And if you want, now people are trying to give more clarity in the financial system globally. I think that it has an impact also on the tax system globally, where it was a little bit awkward that a lot of technology company could escape the normal tax rate that any other company would have in the so-called real economy that you have mentioned earlier. And I think that now we are seeing that companies like Microsoft, Amazon's, Facebook agrees with a new system, which is basically you pay taxes in the country where you make the revenues and you don't pay taxes where the company is incorporated, whether it is in Ireland or in the Netherlands or in the Caribbean islands. So at the end of the day, more transparency will certainly help to solve this problem and also a reform in the global tax system.
You know, you brought a couple of key issues about corporations sitting on a lot of cash. So we've got U.S. companies sitting on about $1.7 trillion worth of cash, Japanese
yes.
companies $2.1 trillion, EU companies $1.4 trillion. And global tax reform will obviously impact these corporations and governments. But let's take in a U.S. example. So the U.S. has just had the Trump tax plan that's just been implemented. What do you think the impact is going to be on unemployment, productivity, and the growth of real wages in the U.S., particularly among blue-collar jobs?
Well, first, I think what we have seen is that a lot of this cash, which has been parked outside the United States of America, was there simply because the tax rate in the U.S. was so high that people didn't want to bring the money back home. Let me remind you, the tax rate before the reform was 35% for companies. So basically, companies said, you know, I'm not going to bring my money back. And if they don't bring the money back, what they did with it was essentially buying companies abroad. And that's why we had such an explosion in mergers and acquisition worldwide. Now, the objective of the tax reform of the president is to say, I'm going to reduce the tax rate drastically, 21%, in such a way also that these companies are going to bring the money back in the U.S. And some have said they will do so, like Apple, for example. And when the money is going to be back in the U.S., it's going to be used to create jobs, to do investment, etc. So this is a theory. Everybody hopes, of course, in the U.S. that it will happen. An alternative scenario is that the money indeed will go back, but instead of being used to create new jobs and new investment, will be used to give dividends to shareholders and maybe to buy back shares of the company, because a lot of those companies think that buying back shares is a nice way to keep the share price up. So for the moment, I think the jury is still out and people are still wondering, yes, the money will go back, at least part of it. Will it be used to create jobs? Nobody is quite sure for the moment.
But Stefan, one impact that it may have is also deindustrialization of some emerging economies, especially in Asia, because U.S. corporations, instead of investing overseas, will invest domestically. Do you think that that's a likely scenario?
Yes, indeed. And I think we have seen also some of the premises of this, not only with U.S. companies, but also with European ones, where basically when technology is becoming so efficient, when you have robots, when you have artificial intelligence, you can really start to produce goods again in quite expensive countries in Europe or even in the U.S., because simply you have taken the labor cost aspect of your business model out. And now we can see some factories, for example, in the shoe business, etc., going back, for example, to Germany. And those factories are entirely automated, almost entirely automated. So it has two impacts. The first one is obviously, as you have mentioned, deindustrialization in some of the countries in Asia, where suddenly you had a factory which basically was attracted with a lot of tax incentives. And then this factory, after, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, goes back to Germany or elsewhere. And this is a real issue. The second issue is the one you see in the country where the factory is coming back, whether it is in Europe or the U.S., where when the business left, it destroyed blue-collar jobs, but when the factory is coming back, it's creating white-collar jobs, very sophisticated ones, engineers, robot specialists, etc., and it creates also social destabilization because the jobs that were lost are not recreated when the business is coming back. So I think you're right. In many countries, it's deindustrialization, early deindustrialization, and this is worrisome, no doubt.
I'm Brian Fernandez, and I'm speaking to Stefan Garelli, founder of the IMD World Competitiveness Center. In just a bit, Stefan will continue to share his insights on what governments and businesses need to do to prepare for the challenges ahead. Stay with us, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are with Stefan Garelli, founder of the IMD World Competitiveness Center. Stefan, you mentioned that in the first half of 2017, for example, with this whole rise of M&As, we had about 1.5 trillion US dollars in M&As globally, which is a record. There's also a trend of an emergence of new companies on the global stage, particularly from China, as well as emerging markets. We think of the likes of Tencent and Alibaba. What's your view on this and how will it impact global markets?
I think it is one of the biggest revolution we are seeing on global market. It is the emergence of companies from emerging countries and, of course, China, in addition, becoming very quickly global brands. I think that we are seeing now that we have a lot of new names on the market, a lot of companies which are not only performing very well, but which are developing an identity by themselves. They are able, like everybody knows now, Alibaba, Tencent, and also other companies like Fosun or H&A, etc. They are really able to have an impact on the global economy. Some of them have huge market capitalization, of course, Alibaba, Tencent. And I think that this is changing completely the picture, because I could remember, as a professor about 10 years ago, I could more or less recognize most of the companies and competitors in many industry sectors. Today, I am confronted to newcomers, which are becoming very rapidly successful, many of them coming from Asia, but also from the Arab world, India, Latin America, and in addition, many of them being family-owned business, which is completely different from the American-European system where you have large corporations which are on the stock exchange. Here we are seeing something completely new.
Stefan, but one of the things that's fueling this is also cheap money. And we're coming to the end of the era of cheap money. Do you think this is going to impact M&As then moving forward?
Yes, definitely, because a lot of people are going maybe to look at some investment which are also very secure plus with some interest rates. And this is what happened recently with the stock exchange, where it was worried about two things. Number one is that, of course, cheap money was going now, and it means that other investment would be, again, very attractive, like long-term bonds. And the second thing was, of course, the fact that inflation could be coming back, because if interest rates are going up, if wages are going up a little bit, we have in the U.S., we are 2.9% increase in wages. We have seen a lot of debate in countries which usually are very strict, like Germany, but still increasing their wages. I think people start to fear that inflation is going to come back. And when inflation is going to come back, the mindset of people in terms of investment is going to change drastically.
Stefan, you mentioned earlier about how higher tech industries are moving back to their home countries, and you used a specific example of the shoe business in Germany. What sort of key technologies and trends do you see that are shaping the global competitive landscape?
There are many of them, and I think that the first one is, of course, automation and robots. The second one is, of course, artificial intelligence with all what it means. And finally, I think a lot have been said about, you know, bitcoins, etc. But really, it is the technology behind, which is going to be really the blockchain technology, which is going to have a huge impact, because it is going to change completely the way transfer of money is going to be done, not only in finance, but in plenty of other sectors, maybe the real estate, maybe transferring other things than money, but just information. So I think we are looking at an incredible number of new technology arriving on the market altogether. These together with mobile telephony and, of course, social media. The real issue is going to be, number one, how companies are going to be able to absorb that, because this is a very big challenge for a lot of companies to absorb this new technology. And the second big challenge is, how can you make money with this?
Because one more challenge, Stefan. Also, yes. How socially the economies are going to be impacted, because you're going to have disruption of jobs.
Yes, you are going to have, destruction or displacement of jobs. It just depends. Every time you have a technological innovation, you are right. Some of the jobs are destroyed, and others are created elsewhere. The problem is that those who are losing their jobs are not the same one as those who are finding a new job in the new economy. I assume that a lot of jobs may be destroyed in financial transactions, for example. It doesn't mean that those people who are going to lose their job are going to become, from one day to the other, experts in automation, robotics, or blockchain transaction. So here, you're right. Social destabilization, actually, it has always happened that way. I mean, when the automobile came, it destroyed all the poor guys who were working in the horse business. And I'm chairman of a newspaper here, and I see that now when we have the social media coming in, of course, paper as a means of transferring information is very much under attack.
So what can businesses then do to adapt to these changes?
I think that the first thing that business should do is to realize that their strategy is going to be impacted by the environment around them. I think that they are not in a cozy world anymore, and most probably they are going to have more impact by the environment than they've ever been before. And this is going to take place in a very strange way, which is that maybe we don't know today what are going to be our competitors tomorrow. Nobody would have thought that, for example, Amazon would suddenly become the biggest player in cloud computing or would start to invest in food retailing. Nobody would have expected that Facebook and Google would become the world leaders in digital advertising. Nobody would have expected either that a company like Apple would become almost overnight the largest watch producer in the world. So I think that everybody is there saying, you know, maybe my competitor is going to come from a totally different sector than today. People in the medical world, health, suddenly realize that a company like Amazon can become a very big competitor overnight. People who are in banking and finance suddenly think that, well, if Facebook decides to go into financial transaction, maybe they have the potential to become a world leader within 3 or 4 years. And I think this ability to look beyond the horizon, to try to find out where will the next big wave of competitiveness come from, is probably one of the most important things that a company can do today.
Now, let's take a look at governments then. What can governments do to prepare their economies for these changes and really not be left behind?
I think the first thing they should do is to realize that it is incredibly difficult to forecast what will happen in 4 to 5 years from now, and for government, but also for companies. So basically, the concept of resilience is a key one, to try to build some structure in the economy, whether it is in the administration or in taking decision, which can react as quickly as possible to change in the environment. For example, we know that blockchain technology is going to have an impact. Let's try to make sure that we have a legislation which is quickly put in place in this respect. In the same way, we know that data privacy is going to be key for transaction in the future. Let's make sure that we have all the regulation in place to protect how people are going to be exposed to data theft, but also to keep their own personal data secure. I think that it means that it has to be an administration which is lean, which is open to technology, but which is also much more in line with what citizens want, perhaps considering citizens as clients, which is not always the mindset that we find sometimes in administration. No, of course, not in Malaysia, but elsewhere.
Stefan, it was an enlightening discussion, and it was a pleasure having you on The Breakfast Grill. We've been speaking to Stefan Garelli, founder of the IMD World Competitiveness Centre. We got in touch with him through the London Speaker Bureau Asia. You've been listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.